Dateline, December 9, 2010. Shirin wanders for one last time. Forever. Is there any genre better than the role-playing game? Obviously not, as the test of time has proven. These days, every video game is at least a little bit RPG-influenced. It's also worth remembering that the genre grew up more or less alongside the medium of video games, as the earliest RPGs, i.e. pen and paper, were coming together around the same time that Ralph Baer was designing his brown box prototypes. As video games exploded in popularity in the 1980s, RPGs were there from the start. Earlier this year, we commemorated the 40th anniversary of Rogue, itself an adaptation of the pen and paper RPGs that the creators had enjoyed in the 1970s. Before the 80s would end, the RPG was so popular as a video game genre that entire subgenres were emerging, including one that was dominating an entire nation. The JRPG had taken concepts from early computer titles like Wizardry and simplified the formula to better fit the home console, conquering Japan's collective imagination and the market in the process. However, video game RPGs have a problem that traditional RPGs do not. Being computer programs, video games lack the open-ended nature that human beings wielding dice possess. Video game RPGs can deliver grand stories and memorable characters, but those stories and characters will not vary over time. I can play Dungeons & Dragons whenever I want for as long as I want, and it will always be a unique experience which I can never finish. But Final Fantasy VII and Ultima IV and Undertale are written in metaphorical stone. They will unfold the same way for players in the distant future, just as they did for me, always. The creators of the aforementioned Rogue enjoyed RPGs, and wanted to play them again and again. So they tried to solve this problem in their game by randomizing everything in the dungeon, ensuring that no two playthroughs were the same. This made Rogue special. So special that we still invoke its name to this day when we talk about video games with unfixed elements. Just like Wizardry, Rogue made its way to Japan, and specifically into the hands of Koichi Nakamura, one of the key figures behind the original Dragon Quest. In a 2012 interview with none other than Jeremy Parrish, Nakamura said, "In the beginning, I played it for a whole week and didn't see what was supposed to be so much fun about it. But after that, I started to understand the game." Just as his team did before at Enix, Nakamura, founder of Chunsoft, now Spike Chunsoft, took a complex computer RPG and simplified it so that a broader Japanese audience could better understand it. The result was Fushigena Dungeon, later localized as Mystery Dungeon, Chunsoft's first original RPG, although the first entry in the series with itself a spin-off of Dragon Quest IV. When the time came to make a sequel, Chunsoft wanted to create an original hero that wasn't tied to another franchise. And thus, Shirin the Wanderer was born in 1995. As Chunsoft's Seiichiro Nagahata told Sega in 2008, "Other titles have their own set world that we cannot change. So we could say that Shirin is a title where we can fully express what Mystery Dungeon is capable of." Like Rogue, Shirin the Wanderer games are designed to be played over and over again. The running tagline for each game in the series is, "An RPG you can play 1,000 times." Regardless of what story or exact setting Sharon faces, each quest will send him into a new dungeon with a new layout that he must safely navigate. Unlike the blank slate disposable characters of Rogue, Sharon never dies though. Instead, defeat means he collapses and wakes up again outside the dungeon, minus his possessions and with his experience reduced to level 1. After its debut on the Super Famicom in 1995, the Sharon the Wanderer series split between home and portable consoles, where the replayability and randomness were a perfect fit for gaming on the go. While these handheld adventures were initially a side series, once the original game was ported to the Nintendo DS in 2006, the new direction became clear. Sharon the Wanderer 3 debuted on the Wii, but was then ported to the PSP. Sharon the Wanderer 4 was the first all-portable entry, appearing on the DS and PSP. That brings us to Sharon the Wanderer 5, released on December 9, 2010 in Japan for the Nintendo DS, my entry point to the series. I had heard the name Sharon brought up in online articles for years, but since most entries were never localized into English, I had never played any of the games before. However, in 2010 I was already living in Japan and exploring the then-booming world of video game bars. And on the 20th anniversary of the Super Famicom, I found myself in a tiny corner of Osaka playing the original Sharon the Wanderer for the first time. When a brand new edition launched weeks later, I was fully on board. Sharon the Wanderer proved to be perfect commuter fuel. With over an hour's travel between my home and my job, I welcomed a chance to feel like I was exploring someplace new each trip, even as I journeyed to the exact same real-world destination. The series has a reputation for being difficult that is not undeserved. I certainly failed to finish the dungeons more than I succeeded, but that reputation is perhaps exaggerated given that the games are designed to be replayed. You can play Sharon the Wanderer 5 1,000 times because without the randomness, the game would be over in a couple of hours at most. The excitement of finding a new weapon, the jolt of turning a corner and discovering a monster house full of beasts, the tension of managing Sharon's hunger alongside his HP, all of these elements are integral to the experience. By contrast, the game is a lot more generous than other RPGs because Sharon's health automatically regenerates with each turn, and that turn system is universal. Monsters do not move unless you do. A patient Sharon the Wanderer player has all the time in the world to calculate each step, each attack, and each item used. There are also persistent elements in Sharon the Wanderer that make it far less punishing than Rogue, offering players a way to make progress even if they come up short. Money can be deposited in a bank which will be saved for future playthroughs. Equipment can be permanently enhanced, and players can tag key items so that they can be retrieved if lost. There are also special items that allow Sharon to escape a dungeon with his inventory intact. The dungeon and his experience will still be reset, but Sharon will have an advantage when he next enters due to his preserved gear. In Sharon the Wanderer 5, the story revolves around a magical Tower of Fortune. Before he can unseal its entrance, Sharon must first clear three separate towers representing the past, present, and future to acquire a die from each. Even though each playthrough is randomized, Sharon does not have to collect all three dice in one journey. These key items remain unlocked even if Sharon is defeated. However, each journey to the Tower of Fortune does require passing through one of the other towers, leading to a recurring choice. Should Sharon take the easiest route to increase his chances of success, or take the harder path to build up more strength? December 2010 was late in the life cycle of the Nintendo DS, and despite my evangelizing on Twitter, Sharon the Wanderer 5 did not sell as well as the previous title, which had been released earlier that same year. With no English language version to look forward to and no announcement of a new entry, the series fell into hiatus and dropped off my personal radar. It seemed Shirin had taken his final steps, but then a miracle occurred. Shirin the Wanderer 5 Plus was released on the PlayStation Vita in 2015, with an English language edition released a year later. Unfortunately, 2016 was far too late for new Vita releases outside Japan, and the series seemed again headed for history. Until a second miracle occurred, and a port for PC and Switch was announced this year. As of this writing, Shirin the Wanderer, the Tower of Fortune and the Dice of Fate, as it is called outside Japan, has just been released worldwide, nicely coinciding with the 10th anniversary of the original DS release and the 25th anniversary of that character's Super Famicom debut. Perhaps it was inevitable that a hero famous for overcoming permadeath was able to survive three lackluster releases only to reemerge on the global market. We may also have the popularity of the Souls-like genre and its emphasis on trial by death to explain how a JRPG roguelike with few international fans found a new audience in 2020. Whatever his secret, I'm so happy to have Shirin back from the dead. The series has a gorgeous pixel art aesthetic with heroes and monsters alike presented as cute, colorful sprites on an easy-to-parse grid. The music is spirited and fun, not too tense but not too chill, with a lot of Japanese flavor that other RPG series steeped in Western fantasy tropes do not feature. Simply put, Shirin the Wanderer may be a roguelike, but it's a JRPG roguelike as distinct from its inspiration as Final Fantasy is from Ultima. It is certainly not a game for everyone, but it is the perfect game for a non-zero number of lapsed RPG fans such as myself, who couldn't possibly spend 80 hours finishing an epic quest, but could easily spend 100 hours fumbling with Shirin in 35-minute chunks. Thank you for listening to this audio version of my latest This Week in Retro column, a Retronauts exclusive for our Patreon supporters. My name is Diamond Fight, and you can follow me on Twitter at FEITCLUB. Good night!